Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
There's ice falling from the sky. That's what's up.
We're having some weather here.
And Derby County have cancelled their Christmas party.
Oh, yeah? What for?
They thought it would be a bad idea, considering what happened at the bowling in September, when two guys ended up crashing into each other and the club captain ended up tearing his leg apart.
So they can't trust their players to not drive drunk to the point where they're cancelling all team functions?
However, they are hiring a player coach in Wayne Rooney, who, by my mathematics, will have just finished his drink driving ban from September 2017.
In the business, we're told that things like that aren't a good optic.
Not a good optic.
Not a good optic. How was your Thanksgiving, my friend?
It was really nice.
Yeah.
Stayed local in Brooklyn with the girlfriend. She cooked a turkey. I carved it. I felt more like a man. I did a good job. I watch videos on YouTube how to do it properly. There's a proper way.
All right. I mean, the hard part is cooking it.
Oh, yeah. And she got that spot on. Okay. She did an excellent job.
You're making yourself out to be some kind of hero here.
When
cut a turkey up.
How can I insert myself into her glory? That's what a line. I'm sorry.
This time of year, I have no off valve with eating. And it's it's bad, and I can feel it in my clothes. I already have weird body syndrome under the best of circumstances.
Yeah.
This only exacerbates my symptoms.
This week, I'm going to be like a biblical character in the desert who just doesn't eat as some kind of fast and penance.
Yeah. Well, what a show we do have coming up for you here today. There's a lot that's gone on. I wonder if people were angry that we didn't have an emergency podcast out after Unai Emery got sacked from his job. Unfortunately, to all of you who were angry about that, all I can tell you was it was a holiday weekend. I don't know what you want me to say in a situation like this.
But we're making up for it.
Well, yeah. We're doing a regularly scheduled podcast. Does that count as making up for it?
Kind of.
We're going to talk all about Unai Emery. We're going to talk about the weekend's results at Arsenal. We'll talk about who or what should be coming in next. I think that's just who. I don't think there's any what will be managing the team next. No sort of plant. Although some Arsenal fans may have preferred that to what just went on over the last several months.
Some kind of gas.
Lots of other games. This was kind of, I don't know, this weekend in the league just sort of felt important in terms of a lot of weird results that went on.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I do think so. I mean, look, Manchester City dropping points to Newcastle, West Ham beating Chelsea, Manchester United dropping points to Aston Villa. Leicester City now, I think, asserting themselves as the number one title challenger to Liverpool.
But still 8 points back.
Well, it's all under the pretense that there is a title challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, you can dismiss that, and I wouldn't fault anyone who did. But if there is a title challenger, I think this is a weekend where we now have to kind of like change that from one club to the next. You're looking at me dismissively. It's a look I'm very, very used to.
I'm not really.
Let's get into it right now. Let's start out with the Arsenal conversation. Unai Emery, like I said, he gone at the Emirates. I suppose it was a long time coming. I can't help but wonder if the recent action from Tottenham may have accelerated Arsenal's decision to do this, if there was some sort of feeling like, well, our North London rivals are now going to kick on with a manager that is going to help them get back on track. We can't fall behind them any further than we have already. We need to kind of cut bait before this gets out of hand.
I think there was a look towards next season and where they're going to be in terms of European football, if that's even still a possibility. It was definitely urgent that they did something.
Well, here's the big question, though, that I have. You say it's urgent, and that's interesting to me. And look, it became his position at the club became untenable. If you were somebody who was an Unai Emery defender, it was becoming more and more difficult to defend him on a week-in, week-out basis. So I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm surprised he was fired or that it was unfair that he was fired. However, I will ask this question. His firing, as warranted as it may or may not have been, does it even matter? Like, is there anything within Arsenal that you expect to change in the next few weeks as opposed to what we've seen the last several months?
No, you're right. And what's interesting is that the less heralded, less talked about change could have been the change that really matters. Sven Mislintat came into this club while Wenger was there with the, what was he, Andrew? I don't even know the titles anymore. Director of football, sporting director, director of sporting football, football sporting director, whatever. He had that title and there was signings and moves and a change in the club that was going to occur under him. And he kind of was slid out the door. There was controversy in his firing or removal or his leaving, but it just kind of happened. And now we have Raul Sanlehi in there and he is calling the shots. And maybe, you know, ultimately, maybe it doesn't matter that it's Emery now. Maybe it doesn't matter who they bring in. They may not get the right guy. Maybe the structure is just in the same way that we talk about Manchester United. Maybe it's a structural problem.
Well, sometimes you're right. Structural problem. Who's making decisions? Who's making signings? That is all part of it. But can't we sometimes, there's one thing in sports, not even just soccer. I really think every sport, we get away sometimes from what the real issue is. And like,
it's players.
It's a player's problem. Like,
I know,
the sporting director of football science and sporting directorness of, like, those are the guys that choose the players. So I get what you're saying, but like, I don't care who the next manager is that comes in. Mustafi, you know, Socrates, like, these are still the defenders for this club.
But David, you know,
David Luiz
brought into the club. Look at the game at the weekend. Like, there's nothing Freddie Ljungberg could have done. Nothing with that. You saw the second half, and you see, again, I talk about the PlayStation footballer where you're trying to move a defender and he just shoots completely out of position. How many times did that happen? Every time Norwich, not you know, Liverpool, not Manchester United, not anybody, Norwich. Every time Norwich went at them, I thought there was a goal on. Has Todd Cantwell had a more outstanding game for Norwich? Maybe against City, I guess, but come on. It was unbelievable.
No, I mean, Timu Puk, the first goal, I know it took a deflection, but still, is anybody going to close out on this guy? He's really like the only true goal-scoring threat for Norwich. Like, David Luiz, are you going to step up at any point
here? How good was Leno, by the way? Leno had his best game. That second half, I think maybe it was Cantwell who whipped one to the bottom corner and he tipped it onto the post. I mean, really, Norwich should have won that game.
Yeah, I just wonder, and I know people will think that this is Spursy Andy doing this, but look, Arsenal and Tottenham, because of their rivalry, are oftentimes compared with one another. And like, you could see why Tottenham would get a new manager bounce from somebody, especially a manager of Jose Mourinho's quality coming in, because like, I really do believe that there are still quality players on that team. Just for whatever reason, it wasn't working in the last days of Mauricio Pochettino. When I look at Arsenal, I just like, I don't know. Like, we know that there's quality up front with Aubameyang and Lacazette. Like, they do have players who are capable of scoring goals, but I just truly feel that as long as the defense is what it is, I don't really know how you can expect results to change. The only thing that I would say is, like, Nicolas Pepe, you know, like a player like that who was supposed to be a hugely heralded signing, who has now, for whatever reason, he's just having a hard time getting regular minutes under this manager. Maybe a new manager comes in who knows how to utilize him in a more productive way week in, week out, and suddenly, because like, we've seen him have great moments for Arsenal so far. It's just he's been unable to sustain it, and I guess whatever they're seeing in training doesn't warrant him playing as much as he probably thinks he should. So, like, find somebody who can unlock whatever it is that he can bring. That, like, things like that are the variables, but other than that, I just think this club is kind of lost right now.
I agree with you. It is lost, and it's probably been heading that way for some time. And the weekend was just jarring, because we know what Arsenal are. We regularly see them give up chances. We regularly see them being cut apart. But it's not just the defence now, Andrew. I take issue with what you said there. The midfield is kind of all over the place. It was interesting listening to people talk after the game, saying that Granit Xhaka actually had one of his better games. If that's one of his better games, you know. I mean, everything seemed just a mess. And I keep going back to what I said before about them being loaded up front. I remember getting an email in August, right before the start of the season. Who would you have? And it listed Pepe, Aubameyang, Lacazette, or Salah, Mane, and Firmino.
Well,
But hang on. And I looked at it and I thought, well, I'd obviously go with the established three. There's no question. And you know, nothing would change my mind on that. But I looked at the Arsenal front three and I thought, yeah, that's really good. But the kitchen is burnt to the ground. And now not the, you know, the stairs is on fire. Everything. It's just window dressing, this front line.
We always said that their summer transfer window was weird.
Very strange.
Spending that kind of resources on Pepe when it felt like they were quality up front already. And then bringing in David Luiz as your, like, in case of emergency.
And Kieran Tierney as a fullback. I'm just like, excellent fullback. Very good signing. But, like, it doesn't address what's happening in the center of that defense.
Right. Well, I would say that as it stands right now in early December, the most right that I or either of us have ever been about anything was the Arsenal summer transfer window period. And I don't know how good Harry Maguire really is. I think he's a good player, but like the Man, fact that Arsenal were never even really in on him, and it was all, you know, David Luiz was their big signing to boost that defense, is just like,
because to show how fans get wrapped up in things. Think how late some of those signings are. Think how late the signing of a centre back was in David Luiz. And when we did our predictions, I said, I think they'll finish outside of the top four. I said, I think they'll finish outside of the top six, maybe. And people were like, is he on drugs?
Who said that?
Oh, yeah, I got a lot of that. You can talk yourself into paper teams and X or Y will do this or that, but maybe you're right. When it comes down to it, players didn't perform for him.
Yeah, it's fun. You know when it really felt like Unai Emery had lost? And there's any number of moments where you could say it looked like he had lost this club. But this fan base hates Mesut Ozil. But when the tide turned and the fan base suddenly got on Emery for not playing a player that they universally despise, then it's like, well, they just hate this manager.
But
now,
even that was a mess. That wasn't even the manager's decision the way he framed it. So he comes out and he says, we have made a decision, implicating the board in it, showing himself to be weak, showing himself to be run by the board, if that's the case, or trying to pass it off. One way or the other, it wasn't a good optic. So he was out. And on this podcast, I'm saying, right, well, so they're going to make a decision that outside of League Cup and Cup competitions, he's not going to play. And the next thing, it's reversed. He's back in. Where? Like, what is this? The captaincy. Think about how they did the captaincy. We'll have a vote amongst the players. You should probably do that, Unai. Of what a manager can control.
Is it that rare for players to choose their own captain?
I've never heard of it quite like that.
Because all I'm saying is, it wound up going that way. But like, if this was, should I even say this? I don't know Granit Xhaka. He might be a great guy who just happens to not be that good at soccer. But like, I just feel like if this was a normal group of Arsenal players, they probably would have made a normal captaincy selection and this never would have been an issue. But they happened to choose the one player that the fans can't stand. It was like if they chose Ozil or Xhaka, like those would be the only choices that wouldn't have gone over well with the fan base. And this group of players chose a guy that they knew the fans would hate. And like
a lightning rod.
So like it backfired on Unai Emery, but under any sort of normal circumstances, like it wouldn't have ever been an issue.
I think if the manager picks the team, Andrew, he picks the captain too. Now, maybe we're talking too much about the importance of the captain in the modern game, but equally, it's just another decision that's gone wrong in many other decisions. Also,
but allowing a captain to be chosen that's hated by the fans suddenly makes, you're right, the captain may not be an important thing, but it becomes that when you do something like that.
Yeah.
Like now it's an issue.
There was a line, the saddest line, before we get off this, the saddest line from a piece by Miguel Delaney that I read at the weekend was how apparently in the dressing room before games, as a means to rile everybody up and get everybody going, and possibly because he didn't have a ton of English or enough inspiring Al Pacino halftime English, he used to get the senior pros, all the players, to put their hands in, right? In a real kind of
fifth grade fashion,
and go, Arsenal, Arsenal, Arsenal. Shout it out as a kind of a motivating thing.
Right.
That's,
yeah. You don't see Bill Belichick organizing that on the sidelines of Patriots games.
No. Maybe it's just a little window into the general dysfunction in there. But by the way, last season, the stats didn't lie. They went away to Fulham and they hammered Fulham and they looked brilliant going forward. And everyone got on our backs, because I mentioned the shots. They surrendered like 20-something shots to Fulham. You're like, that's not good. That shouldn't be happening.
Right.
And it's all just kind of coagulated now together, and it's bye-bye Emery.
Yeah. Arsenal's current 7-game winless streak, which saw Emery off, is their worst since February of 1992 under George Graham. That's bad. Arsenal won exactly the same number of points in Emery's 51 games as they did in Arsene Wenger's final 51 games. That's amazing. They actually had fewer wins under Emery than they did in Wenger's final 51.
And I still,
no progress. Zero progress. That's what that tells you.
And I still feel bad for Emery. And I kind of, I know Pep Guardiola likes to talk in very, very generous terms about the vanquished, usually after a game where he's hammered someone.
Right.
They were so good. They were brilliant.
It's easy to be graceful in victory.
But I do think that we shouldn't discount what Emery did in Spain. And
look,
like he's probably an excellent coach, but this was...
We haven't said that he's bad at his job. If anything, we said that he has bad players.
He was bad. I think it was a combination of a lot of things.
Yeah.
And he wasn't good at Arsenal.
By the way, one other thing, and we will move on, but like thinking more about Nicolas Pepe, doesn't it... like, if you were an American fan out there who thought Frank Lampard hated America by his use of Christian Pulisic, then you must feel like, I mean, what does Unai Emery think of the Ivory Coast with the way they've used Nicolas? Like, doesn't it make all the American fans that thought that, like, you have to now look, you have to, now that Pulisic's playing well, you can kind of remove yourself from the situation and look around at other clubs with their young players that have just come into the team, and you can see, like, oh, maybe we jumped the gun a little bit on some of our feelings with regards to Pulisic and Lampard.
It was an embarrassing period for US soccer fans. By the way, I won't mention that. I'll wait till we talk about Chelsea before I talk about new stats on Pulisic. He's the best.
Oh, I can't wait for that. I almost want to jump to it right now. We will move off of this. Last thing I do want to say, what's next for Arsenal? I mean, obviously, I don't think that we necessarily believe Freddie Ljungberg will be the long-term appointment for this club. There's been all kinds of names thrown around. It doesn't feel like there's consensus. However, AFTV, formerly known as Arsenal Fan TV, DT has spoken.
And he is in no doubt as to who should take the job.
The board need to act. And listen, looking at it, reflecting over the last few days, I think we need to go all out and go for Brendan Rodgers.
Yep.
Honestly. He's already flirting with the idea. You see some of his press conferences in the last couple of days. And with all due respect to Leicester, we're a bigger club all day long. So why would Brendan Rodgers not want to come? He left Celtic in the middle of nearly winning the treble. There's no loyalty there. If he's got the opportunity, and I feel if we really go and test him, we could get him. And he's Premier League proven.
I mean, it would take tremendous character from Brendan Rodgers to leave Leicester at this point. Again, Brendan doesn't help himself with this stuff. I wouldn't say he's flirting necessarily, but he is putting the vibes out.
He enjoys the chase.
Oh, he does enjoy the chase. And, you know, he was asked a question about the Arsenal job after the game against Everton at the weekend. And about a contract or a clause in his contract that would allow him to leave. And he, instead of saying no interest, you know, you can, there are ways for managers to shut this down.
By the way, it's okay for you to lie. You could get off mic and when the camera stops rolling and immediately say, whew, that was a tough one to lie about, but just lie.
Yeah. Brendan wouldn't write it on a napkin though. He wouldn't say I'm resigning as the HC of the LCFC. Yeah. But Brendan, but be under no illusions. Like, so if we're putting together the elite three English clubs, Andrew, of history, mm-hmm. it's Manchester United, Liverpool, and Arsenal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He's down the road. Like Forrest Gump going for a run, he would run to London for that job because he sees himself first of all, he wants to get back to that level. And he sees himself as someone who should be there. So,
yeah.
Leicester fans, it may not happen now, but it's happening.
I mean, I hate to say it because things are going so well for Leicester and they don't need this right now in this moment. But Look, let's all be honest with ourselves. Brendan Rodgers' dream is not to manage Leicester City.
No.
And I don't know that it's to manage Arsenal, but whatever his dream is, going from Leicester to Arsenal is certainly a step in that direction. So,
Kulo Torre back at Arsenal.
So it's unfortunate because things are going so well at Leicester City, and his image rehabilitation from the time he left Liverpool to now. Like, if you listen to that clip from DT at AFTV and you, like, fell asleep and are just waking up since Brendan Rodgers left Liverpool, you must be like, what has happened in the time since that this man is now being so highly sought after by a club like Arsenal? It's crazy.
It is funny. And I promise this is the final thing. It is funny if you watch that video. You see the kid standing between the interviewer and DT. And when Brendan Rodgers' name, he does make a kind of a, what? Seriously?
Yeah. We're going to talk with Andrew Mangan of Arsblog. He's been on the podcast with us once before. A little bit later on, just to get a few thoughts from him on everything that's gone on there and where the club is at, because they're in a bad place right now. They really are. Let's see, JJ, we continue now. Manchester City dropped two more points after drawing with Newcastle when it looked like they were through, thanks to one of the goals of the season from Kevin De Bruyne. Do you want to hear what it sounded like?
I want to hear the rigging when it hits the underside of the crossbar.
Yeah. Here's Peter Drury on the call.
Here by Dummett. De Bruyne!
We need to isolate that noise when it cracks the underside of the crossbar. You want to,
Here by Dummett. De Bruyne! That is a...
Oh, that gives me feelings.
What a strike. Yeah. Amazing goal from an amazing player. However, Jonjo Shelvey, maybe not quite to the quality of De Bruyne's goal, but not far off on a really well-worked set piece, ties it, and Pep is left stunned as Newcastle... playing the foil once again to Manchester City. It's unbelievable. Manchester City have dropped 13 points through 14 games this season. They dropped 16 points all of last season. This is a different year, no question about it.
Yeah. When Dubravka denied Gabriel Jesus in the second half, you thought, this is not going to be their day. Now, I'm not saying that I expected them to necessarily lose the game, but I felt as if they're going to drop points here.
Yeah.
And that's a game, ordinarily, with the chances they had, they should have won it. But Newcastle just kind of hung in there, tried to catch him on the break. Saint-Maxime had a good game. I thought Almiron in flashes. He's still quite jittery, nervous, eager to impress. But they were compact. And honestly, Andrew, I think when I see a Man City team and the centre midfielder is Gundogan and you see Fernandinho playing centre back alongside John Stones, it's like robbing Peter to pay Paul. They're losing out by... I know they have to do something, but I think they should try a different option in defence rather than take Fernandinho out in the midfield, because the midfield just looks... If you look at the midfielder's position on the Newcastle equaliser, and Newcastle equalised so quickly. First of all, John Stones did his little PlayStation footballer. He tries to win a tackle. He doesn't need to. And suddenly there's a massive gap in behind. And it was a very good finish, good ball by Almiron, and a good finish by Willems. But if you look at Manchester City's shape there, I think he needs to have a... Pep needs to have another look at that defence and maybe come to the conclusion that taking Fernandinho, put him in the midfield, is the best option right now.
I think you make a great point when you say that. I'm never somebody who will be in favor of weakening two positions to try and fix one. You know, like in the NFL, you see it if like a right tackle gets hurt and you have no faith in the backup, so you move your all-pro left tackle to try to play right tackle. Well, now you've weakened your left tackle position by bringing in a sub and your right tackle by having a left tackle do it. Like, I feel that way watching Fernandinho, where, you know what, just go back to what you do best and try to figure something else out at the center back position. Because right now, he was kind of going to be the great X factor once Laporte got hurt and they were sort of forced into the situation where they had to find Band-Aids at that position. If he was going to be able to do it effectively, then Manchester City might have been able to kick on and be all right in defense. but I just feel like he's just not, that's just, and it's not his fault. It's just not really his position. And I think they, I agree with you. I think they have to go back to playing him at the spot that he knows best. One other thing I want to mention about this, it's not just about Manchester City. It's also about Newcastle. Because if you think about the way the season started, protests from the fan base, boycotts from the fan base, all essentially based around, you could say lack of activity in the transfer window, but it seemed more so based around the appointment of Steve Bruce as their manager. And this is a guy who grew up a Newcastle supporter. And I know he managed Sunderland, and that probably was difficult for a lot of Newcastle fans to take.
Probably.
But the treatment that Steve Bruce took leading into the season was just brutal. I'm not going to say I don't get it, because losing Rafa Benitez and the progress that Newcastle were making for a manager like Steve Bruce, who has never had great success as a manager in the Premier League, it sends a statement to a fan base that we are not looking to kick on, we're just looking to survive, and that's a dangerous message to send. However, I do wonder if we're reaching a point where there are some haters out there that might need to apologize.
Look, there's fans online, Andrew, who need to apologize, but they're not the same as the journalists who questioned Steve Bruce. There was a lot of people who asked legitimate questions about selections and the way he set up his team, particularly in that opening game against Arsenal. And, you know, people including Steve Bruce's son, Alex Bruce, took exception to journalists asking questions. That's not okay. Equally, though, the fans' personal abuse of Steve Bruce was wrong. Very wrong. But it's 2 wins in 5, Andrew.
Well, he's now beaten Tottenham.
Sorry, is it 2 wins in 5?
No, 4. He's beaten Tottenham, Manchester... Oh, in the season or in their last 5? Well, here.
1 win in 5.
He's beaten Spurs, Manchester United. He's drawn with City. They've also beaten West Ham. They beat Bournemouth. They actually have more points right now at this stage than Rafa Benitez did at the same time last
year. But they had a wretched start last season and they turned it around.
Yeah, however, Steve Bruce is also doing this without Solomon Rondon and Iosi Perez, who turned out to be two of the best, maybe the two best players for Newcastle last year.
Yeah, but he got his Brazilian center forward signing, which, by the way,
I mean,
and it's amazing to me in that game, and it just goes to show you that the levels of analysis of Newcastle where, yeah, that's a good point, but things are still not quite going their way. The fans were on his back. When Joe Linton was taken off, there wasn't jeers, there wasn't, you know, but there was a bit of a sigh of relief because he had a horrible game. and that is a big piece there. You know, there was some money given to him to replace those guys.
That's true. That is true. But I think right now Steve Bruce is overperforming what even his most ardent detractor would have thought.
And I don't mean to be ardent detractor, but, you know, they lost 2-0 last week against Aston Villa.
I mean,
this is a point. This is a good point, but they are not fixed. And Steve Bruce has done a serviceable job, no more than that.
But for... I mean, do you want to get into an argument on this? Like,
not really, but I just think we need to be careful. It's easy in the moment now to...
Yeah, but expectation management is also a thing. And like, for what the fan base thought the club was going to be when he was named their manager, and the fact that they're ahead of where Rafa Benitez had them a year ago, that has to say something
actually
about the job he's doing with a really below average squad.
That's fair. That is fair, because what wasn't it? They had 2 wins in 13 at this point last season, so...
Let's see. West Ham, talking about a club that was in dire straits, it seemed like their manager was on the brink any day now of having lost his job. And then he goes out and he beats Chelsea 1-0. And this is kind of the game when I said at the start of the podcast that, like, the weirdness of this season. I feel like it's games like this where you really see that kind of crystallize, that this year is just kind of different in the way of... I don't know, maybe it was like this before, but just more than I can remember, it feels like anyone can beat anyone any given week.
Right.
Except Liverpool.
And ordinarily, Chelsea would win this game. Do you know what came across my timeline, Andrew? Chelsea have won just 4 of 11 games at Stamford Bridge. Why is their away record so much better than at home? This is from Alan Smith. He wrote this piece. They shoot more, they concede fewer chances and have a higher percentage of possession at Stamford Bridge, but it's no longer just coincidence and players can't explain why. It's one of those odd things. They were clearly dominant at the weekend, but one of those freak results that was thrown up. But West Ham doing this is... I suppose a derby changes the dynamic a bit. Anything can happen in a derby. Cliche, I guess.
I guess so. But I don't know, the way things were going, like you said, with West Ham. Here's something I saw Nick Miller write at ESPN FC that kind of talks about just like the weirdness that we have this season. Every team between Tottenham in fifth and Everton in 17th has won either four or five games this season. Those 13 teams are separated by 6 points. 2 games ago, Tottenham were in 14th. Now they're one position away from the Champions League places. The gap between fifth and top is 20 points. The gap between fifth and bottom is 12. Now, that doesn't all apply to Chelsea because they are just on the other side of fifth. However, it does speak to just what this season is, that just, you know, however bad you're doing in any given moment, you're 2 weeks away from completely righting your ship and feeling much better about yourselves. And maybe that's West Ham right now.
It feels like when, from the moment we started this podcast and particularly talking about the Premier League, me and you always said there's a kind of a mid-table mush. There's a mush of teams that can go on a little run and suddenly rocket up and kind of tap at that top six and then they fall back down.
Yeah.
That mush has been extended.
It's grown.
It's grown.
Substantially, it's grown.
It's like the blob.
It's growing and it's a problem. Let's see, along the lines of clubs and results that just aren't up to par, Manchester United, a 2-2 draw with Aston Villa. And with managers starting to drop like flies, Ole has to be worried. Alarm bells have to be going off there.
Well, it was October when we were told this by Jason Burt of the Daily Telegraph. Ole is looking at a 3-year vision of a squad. It will be an evolution over the coming years. We are at base camp now. What's below base camp?
There is nothing. That's it. Base camp is it.
Now, my problem with this is, I read this in the Athletic this morning, which just is, it's staggering, really. Unfortunately for Solskjaer, it leaves him with 26 points from 22 Premier League games. That's the weekend's draw, since United awarded him the job. Solskjaer has won 6, drawn 8, and lost 8. And perhaps the best way to put that into context is that it is a worse record than the sequence of results that has just cost Unai Emery his job at Arsenal. Mm-hmm. But they seem wedded or committed to the idea we're not chopping and changing and that Ole is indeed the man. We need to put the structures around him. And Gary Neville is saying, and Gary Neville is close to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, 3 to 4 transfer windows. I can't see it.
See, there are some... I think it's kind of an admirable stance for Manchester United to take. I'm just surprised that they're taking it now.
With him.
Right. Like
David Moyes, surely. If Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, based on his CV, is getting this amount of leeway, surely David Moyes deserved more than 8 months.
Well,
surely Jose Mourinho deserved longer even.
Right. And that's the thing is like, Ole, this manager has no track record.
Nothing.
So for this to suddenly be the moment where you say, no, we are going to stay the course with a manager that has never really proven before, not by anyone's fault, just simply by like lack of opportunity. Like this is the moment now where we're going to see this through to the end when, like you said, there's been more accomplished managers that have not been given the same treatment from this club.
LVG sacked in an elevator after winning the FA Cup.
Yeah, it's very strange. The 18 points that United have at this point in the season is their fewest after 14 games since 88-89 when they finished 11th in the table. I mean, that's dangerous. And you see things like this. United, they've had second-half leads in each of their last 3 matches in all competitions, and they've come away without a win in any of them. I mean, like, how do you explain things like that from happening? Not, you know, the ability to or the inability to finish games. It's like worrisome stuff. Again, I'm kind of caught in between two minds because I sort of like the idea of just not changing managers on an annual basis.
But he's got to show you something to suggest that your long-term, pushing your chips to the center of the table for this guy is worth it.
Yeah. A couple more quick ones here. Jose Mourinho makes it 3-for-3 with Spurs in all competitions. It'd be hard to ask for a more encouraging start than what they've given you. And I look at one player in particular as kind of being the living embodiment of that, as Dele Alli, who, for what it's worth, revered Maurizio Pochettino and seemed really emotional after Pochettino was sacked. But whatever it is that Mourinho has been doing with this player, he has changed Dele Alli from the player that we saw over the last several months to the player we're seeing now. He, I mean, over these last 3 games, he's been the best player on this team. 3 goals and an assist since Mourinho took over in 3 games. He had 2 goals and 1 assist in the previous 10 games for Tottenham. He's been the playmaker. I know Mourinho talked about wanting to play him more as maybe a number, more of a number 10 role. And if that's what they're doing, it's certainly working because he has been at the center of really everything good that has happened for Tottenham under this manager.
He needs to start talking more to Eric Dier then.
It's, you know, it's something I thought.
Eric, have you a brother?
Against Olympiacos, Eric Dier was taken off after 27 minutes. And he wasn't hurt. It was purely tactical. Tottenham went down 2-0. It looked like a disaster. It looked like that their Champions League dream of getting to the knockout stage was going to collapse under this game at home against Olympiacos. They took off Dier, and everything changed. They score 4 straight, and they're going through to the knockout stage. And I saw that, and I thought, well, that's Eric Dier done with this club. And then the 3-4 days later, he's in the starting 11. Mourinho, like we said, Mourinho finds his guys that he likes. And even when you think maybe the tide has turned, like Eric Dier was always going to be one of those guys. Mourinho was desperate to get him at United, and Tottenham wouldn't let go of him, probably to their detriment. I mean, United were trying to get him for $40 million. What's Eric Dier worth now? Like, he's right back into the starting 11, and Tottenham have other guys that can play those positions. I mean, Ndombele, Harry Winks, like you can rotate, you can go with those two with those spots, but no.
Jose Mourinho's Tottenham Hotspur will be Eric Dier giving the ball away forever.
The thing I'm trying to figure out with Tottenham right now is this new manager bounce, or is this actually what Tottenham probably should have been all along?
I would say the latter. Let's be fair.
Okay, that's encouraging.
I think it is the latter. He hasn't had it long enough to break their spirits and trample them down into the dull automatons that he needs them to be. He's only had X amount of training sessions. Look, he definitely has perked up someone like Dele Alli. There's no question about that. But we are still running on big Poch energy here. When Poch was at his best, these are his players, these are his guys, and what we've seen executed so far has been the momentum given by the previous manager, which had dissipated somewhat.
So you don't know what you're saying, essentially, is what I take from any of that.
Mourinho has lifted the place, he's revived the place, but you can't say that he, in this short period of time, that he could possibly have created what's happening here.
So you're, tactically is what you're saying. Like, none of what they're doing is like, well, I don't understand it. How can so he's not responsible for any of this?
No, I are you looking at the men and saying, oh, that's Mourinho there. That goal there, that was Mourinho. Can you see his fingerprints on this team yet?
Let me ask you then, what does a classic Mourinho goal look like?
That's a good question.
All right.
Lumps.
So you're just creating
lumped
a narrative.
Well,
no, he's not just a long ball manager. Come on, that's not fair.
That's not true, but
he's one of the greatest managers in after Sir Alex Ferguson, it might be him next. Like, you can't just say he's a guy that got by with long ball.
No, of course. I'm being facetious. But the last few months at United, it was so just clueless, and it really still colors my view of him. So, look.
Again, player problem. What have United been since Jose Mourinho left? They have bad players. Like, what? I don't know what people expect.
So playing Marcus Rashford on the left 1 week, left wing, left midfield, and then right midfield the next, and not playing.
No one's saying Jose Mourinho was pushing all the right buttons, but I think that he recognized that squad was flawed. By the way, some of his own doing, like a lot of his moves and things. So I'm not going to say that he's absolved of any of it. Mm. But like, if you don't have talent, you have to resort to tactics that like are gonna like what you're doing right now are gonna shade your opinion. What if we were having this conversation after he left Chelsea, when they were probably one of the more enjoyable teams, the first rendition,
exactly.
Right. Well, when you have good players, it can be fun to watch. And you're just sitting here saying right now that you think Tottenham have good players, so why shouldn't it be fun to watch under Jose?
Okay, when is the Maybe he's like we said last week, he has lucked himself into a scenario where he has all the players he's ever wanted.
Maybe.
Because he tried to sign 4 of them.
Yeah.
And now he's in a scenario where he can actually just sit back and unleash them upon the Premier League.
He even has a ball boy that he probably would have paid $50 million for.
Well, at Chelsea in his final season, he was attacking ball boys. Remember the one at Sellers Park?
Yeah. They clearly mean a lot to him.
His agent was in his ear, though. You know that.
It was spontaneous. It happened instantly.
He was like, Jose, new Jose, he's going to like ball boys. he's going to like them.
Okay, I will try.
Did you see they had the kid in for the pre-team meal on Saturday?
Last person who treated ball boys as well as that was Tony Pulis at Stoke, because their job was to towel down the ball for Rory Delap for the long throws.
I will say, like, in watching the way that played out with that kid, Callum Hayes, I think, was the ball boy's name?
I care not.
It's very important. Mm-hmm. But, like, it does go to show everyone at a club does matter in some way.
Definitely.
I mean, that kid should get an assist for that goal.
Same as the kid at Anfield who rolled the ball back quickly to Trent Alexander-Arnold for the quick corner.
Yeah. And by the way, like, those kids also have the power, as we've seen before with Josie's treatment of ball boys, to go the other way. And, like, when Eden Hazard basically assaulted a ball boy. You know,
didn't,
like,
Jose have a go at one as well, or was it Eden Hazard?
Well, Hazard shoved one. Like, he tried to get the ball out of the kid's hands and basically shoved him to the ground.
At Swansea. That was at Swansea.
Yeah. Mm. Everyone matters. Everyone matters. Right down to the cheese plates, the pillows, all of that.
Cheese plates, pillows, and the, what else? Tea lady. Always one that's brought up.
Yep. Two more quick ones, and they both involve clubs in Liverpool. Everton, JJ, with a truly soul-crushing loss. In a time when they and this manager really didn't need it.
That was his face. You'd have to have a heart of stone to watch Marco Silva on the sideline when that goal went in. Kelechi Iheanacho, who, if you had told me Kelechi Iheanacho was at like Alania Vladikavkaz on loan, I would have been okay, fine. I haven't heard of him in like 14 months.
It's turned out to be such a disappointing move.
Well, but besides that, Everton were just. The defending was bad on the goal, definitely, but it was just such, you know, if you look at the way the Brighton game finished, Sheffield United at home, I guess, was a little bit like that with a late goal too. There's been so much of this for them. And now, going into the derby on Wednesday.
I know. Look, we said, and I think, like, I still wonder if this is true, this stretch of games that they have, Everton right now, Leicester City right into Liverpool just a few days later. Like, this is a brutal stretch, and it just feels like a horrible time to make any kind of managerial move. I think you just have to hope that, like, maybe Marco Silva can get a couple draws somewhere in this set of games, and that would have really been a candidate over the weekend that they missed out on, and just keep them as, like, I still don't believe that Everton is a true relegation candidate. But just keep them away from that mark as much as they can, and then make some kind of move once you get out of the new year.
Another club where you wonder what's going on at board level between the ownership, between the kind of legacy chairman they have there who appears to be trying to pull the strings in Bill Kenwright. It's Marcel Brands as well. I suppose he didn't really appoint Silva. Marcel Brands was given the job and told, here's your manager.
Well, by the way, even if he did, let's not suddenly act like the whole world wasn't thinking that was a good appointment at the time for Everton. It felt like he was the up-and-coming manager.
We still ask questions, though. We liked him when he came in at Hull. They still went down. Watford, we put it down to the fact that Watford get rid of their managers quite quickly, as we've seen this weekend, and sometimes twice. And so we gave him a lot of passes. And it just, it hasn't really worked out.
No.
At all.
Yeah.
And a lot of money has been spent. And there's a new stadium on the way. It's just, it's all bad right now. They need a battling 0-0 against Liverpool on Wednesday would do a lot for them.
In the morale table, who would you say is bottom?
Bottom in morale?
Like, if we were, had a table based on, like, high morale versus low morale, who?
Everton are bottom.
Are Arsenal in the relegation zone?
They are, but no, they're slightly above it because at least they've got rid of their manager. There is an open road to happiness.
I guess.
Or you could
that
take.
Road is fraught with obstacles.
Still, it's there. Right now, as we speak, as we sit here on Monday, Silva's still there.
Hmm. I'm going to try to make a low morale table at some point and see who would be going down.
You'd be there.
You paint this image of me. You are
actually
way more.
My morale is down today. Yeah. Low morale.
I'll be honest. It's coming through on the show.
It's not.
It's
I'm bubbly. I'm a bon vivant. I'm telling stories.
Well, this will help. Liverpool, they're just never going to lose again. Their 40 points so far this season are tied for the best 14-game start to a season. ever.
We've hit that magic mark that we won't be relegated now.
Yeah, you're right. Congratulations. You're staying up. Man City had 40 points after 14 games in the 17-18 season. That's the kind of season that we're talking about right now with your club. I mentioned Nick Miller before. He also wrote something in kind of his like weekly observations from the Premier League that really only Liverpool can stop Liverpool. And when you see things like, I mean, obviously injuries are one thing. There's no rhyme or reason really for why they occur. They're hard to predict and whatever. But like stuff like Alisson, the red card, things like that, it feels like those are really the only things that can trip them up, because it doesn't feel like, now that we've seen them handle Manchester City, we'll find out when they face Leicester, but like it doesn't feel like there's any team that's going to be able to outdo them on the field. It's going to have to be some sort of mistake or like rash of injuries that slow this team down.
Yeah,
I don't see it.
Well, I think actually they're going to have to dig deep. There's Fabinho. The Fabinho injury is going to have to be absorbed somehow. The goalkeeper's only a short-term one. He's out for the Everton game, and Adrian is a more than capable replacement. But there's just been a bit of a fall-off across the last 2 to 3 games. They're not quite at it. They're a little bit off. You throw in a few injuries. You throw in a centre-back. We've still seen Dejan Lovren at centre-back. There were a few shaky moments there at the weekend. That midfield, again, I keep saying it to people, they're not going to dominate you in terms of control in the same way that Manchester City will. They do it a different way. And so when you lose a cog like Fabinho, I worry. I worry.
That's fair, because he's been playing so well.
And there's no ready-made replacement for him in there either. So
I know, but I just feel like they have players around
them. They're in
him.
A great position. There's no question.
Yeah, that is true. Like, they can afford to be bad for a month and still probably be fine, because we just don't trust so many of the clubs beneath them right now. I'll tell you what, let's take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Arsenal with Andrew Mangan of the Arse Blog. He joins us next. Don't go anywhere.
Go, 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 go. Go, shout, come in the club.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside. JJ, we've been talking a lot about, of course, what's going on with Arsenal over the past several days. It's been a rocky period, and when those things tend to happen with that club, we speak with Andrew Mangan of Arse Blog. I believe the last time we had him on was not when Wenger was no more, but in like the final days when it seemed like things were imminent.
It was after one of the shellackings from Bayern Munich.
Okay, yeah. So once again, Andrew Mangan of Arse Blog. What's up, man? How are you?
I'm okay, guys. How's it going?
We're good. It's good to speak with you again, although I know you probably would prefer these conversations take place under happier circumstances for your club. I guess the first thing that we want to talk about with regards to Unai Emery and him being out at Arsenal, what was the ultimate downfall with him at this club?
I don't think there was one thing, to be honest. It was like death by a thousand cuts, to be honest, because there were so many issues going on. Ultimately, it all came down to performances, and it came down to results. Just they weren't good enough. Going back last season as well, the end of last season, when Arsenal should have climbed for the Champions League and blew it in spectacular style, losing the Europa League final, and then this season winning just 4 of 13 Premier League games, never really addressing any of the issues that the team had. The pressure was just too much. Arsenal had a season to salvage, and they could only do one thing, and that was to let him go, start the process of starting all over again.
Andrew, what would you put your finger on in terms of the way they played, the team selection? Was there something particularly that annoyed you about Emery and that made this untenable?
I think probably the fact that over the course of 18 months, the things that he said he was going to do to make the club better, he never did. So we all know that Arsenal had issues defensively. They were never fixed. We know that midfield was a problem. That was never sorted out. I think that what people liked about Emery was this tactical flexibility that he brought, and being able to play from four different systems. And it just became a mess. The lack of consistency, the lack of cohesion in the way that the team was set up played a significant role in the way that the team performed. I think they ended up being confused and just not really understanding what it was that I wanted them to do from one game to the next, or even from one half of football to the next. So it all just became a mess. Just never having produced football, people like to think Arsenal should be playing attacking, exciting, fling football, just never came to pass. So all of those things and more just contributed to his downfall.
Andrew, I think one of the things that we're having a hard time figuring out, or at least myself, I don't want to speak for JJ, but the 22-match unbeaten streak under Unai Emery, I mean, that was a thing that happened. Like, did something change from then to now, or was that streak in itself maybe a little bit misleading? Was there luck involved in that? I mean, what's kind of gone on since then?
I think you're right. There was a bit of involved because, I mean, look, credit to any manager and any team that goes 22 games without losing. You know, you're doing something right. There's no question about that. But what the stats and the underlying metrics were showing us was that Arsenal were giving too many chances to the opposition. They were scoring more goals than they should have and not seeding as many as they should have. And the fear was that ultimately that would catch us. And that proves the case, to be honest.
Andrew, looking forward, I suppose, the weekend's game, did you see anything from Freddie Ljungberg that suggests, you know, that he may be somebody who could take this team going forward? Or are you looking at that long, long list of Arsenal candidates? That's the most likely place you'll get your new manager from.
It's really hard to say because he only had one transaction with players, you know. So I don't know that there's anybody out there who could come in with that little preparation and sort out the myriad problems that Arsenal have, you know. I think you could, you know, even Jesus Christ would come down and perform that kind of a miracle in that space of time. I think there were promising signs in the opening 15, 20 minutes of the game in terms of how Arsenal were approaching the game. They wanted to be front-footed. They wanted to play in a position half. They wanted to move the ball more quickly. So those things were promising. But it's still way too early to say whether Freddie is the right guy or not. You know, they've got a big, big decision to make now in terms of who they bring in. And, you know, the trajectory is downwards with Arsenal at this moment in time. And jobs are on the line, and not just the next manager that comes in, but the people who run football sides, football club, Raul Sanyehi, who's the head of football, Edu, who's the technical director. But Emery's only gone 3 or 4 days, so we don't really know quite how far down the road they are. I think somebody, you know, pointed out that, you know, since Emery's gone, there have been maybe a dozen names in the frame. And that doesn't suggest that Arsenal are honing in one man. It means they've got a lot of balls in the air. They're juggling a lot of balls. The various managers that were being linked to, there isn't any real commonality between them. That these guys are all quite distinct in the way that they would manage and approach the game and take the club forward, hopefully. So I think it's all very fluid at the moment in time. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen. I'm not sure when it'll happen either.
Yeah, definitely a period of uncertainty for Arsenal. There's no question about that. I'm sure when things get sorted out with a little bit more certainty, we'll catch up with you again. Andrew Mangan of Arsblog, thanks so much, man.
My pleasure, anytime.
Our thanks to Andrew Mangan of the Arsblog. We'll see what direction they choose to go. If it is Brendan Rodgers, if it's, I don't know. I mean, I said
Allegri.
Yeah, I had said Ten Hag for Tottenham. Arsenal are also a team that like to play open attack style, so I would throw his name in there for them as well.
Is it a good or a bad thing to have all those options or that big of a list? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you have a mailbag?
I do have a mailbag. @CEOSoccerPod, @CaughtOffsideESPN, on Instagram, CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com. Follow us. Send us emails. Leave us a review on iTunes. How about that? Sean Giardin, I don't think there's enough talk of Alexander-Arnold as best player in the world player. Thoughts? Love the pod.
I mean, I'll defer to you.
I think he's possibly the best player in his position in Europe right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with saying that. Best player in the world? Ooh, I don't think so. It's too much.
Like, I don't mean to not take the question seriously because, like, but you said, if you're the best player in the world at your position, then certainly it's okay for you to be in the conversation. But, like,
if someone picked him in a world,
Messi,
yeah,
Trent, like,
right. And also, you think that the players that are end up in these kind of conversations occupy maybe a centre midfield role, a striker role. In the case of Virgil van Dijk, centre back role. Not usually centre backs, but more attacking.
Like, and it's not a slam dunk that he's the best player on this team. In fact, I would say he's, I don't think he is the best player.
The reason, Sean, it's a kind of a good question, is that he is redefining a position. He is playing like a creative attacking midfielder as essentially as a fullback.
Yes.
He's not doing it as a winger who beats guys and goes down the line. It's totally new. We haven't really seen this before. And that's why it's probably come to Sean's attention that nobody's talking about him as the best player in the world player.
Yeah, I suppose.
Here's another wild one. Two wild questions to open up.
Okay.
Joseph Slover, what about Poch to MLS? I know it's a long, long Star Wars intro long crawl shot, but why not us? Andrew, you can feel that.
I don't think that's where he wants his career to go. I don't say that as any slight to MLS.
Right. I don't know, but it will be taken as a slight.
JJ, like, why would he do that?
Exactly.
How much time do we have to spend on this question?
Okay, let's move on. MLucina916 on the Instagrams. On the coverage of Chelsea versus West Ham, there was talk of John Moss to stop refereeing and devoting more time to his record shop, the Vinyl Whistle. What kind of music does he have there? Music and football collide again. Can either of you come up with a better football-related record shop name? Well, I have.
All right.
Red Card Records.
Why is that better than the Vinyl Whistle?
I don't think it is, but it's pretty good. Maybe it's a bit too on the nose, a bit obvious.
So in looking at the Vinyl Whistle's Twitter feed, their most recent tweet was 9 minutes ago, and it's a picture of several albums here.
Lot of Stone Roses.
I'm seeing Forever Delayed, Manic Street Preachers.
Very good.
Yeah, a lot of stuff from that.
Welsh band, Andrew.
Sonic Youth, I'm seeing.
Nice.
I'm seeing Pearl Jam.
Nice.
Let's see. Bernardo Butler. Not familiar with
Bernard Butler.
Yeah, yeah. It's written vertically. It's very hard to read. Bernard Butler.
Okay. I read the article on planetfootball.com.
Bernardo.
It's very good. It's in Headingley, which is close to Leeds University.
I believe West Yorkshire, I think.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. I would love to own a record store, except it would.
So does he work there, or is it just like something that he has like financially backs?
Well, the interviewer for Planet Football met him there, and they had coffee and looked at records.
Very cool.
He bought it. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's hoping. Apparently the Smiths are very popular there.
I mean, it's a record shop in England, I'm sure.
University,
that's a safe bet.
Yeah, but I mean, university kids still buying Smith records is kind of interesting.
Hipster. What's old is new again. You know how things work in this hipster culture.
I have a Smith vinyl. Won't surprise you. Reese710, listening to the pod now, funny story of West Ham's goalkeeper Roberto. When he played at Benfica, he let in some shocking goals, and in Portuguese they refer to it as a frango, which literally translates to chicken. So someone snuck in a chicken and threw it onto the field.
Huh.
So very, very literal with their jokes in Portugal. We should probably mention the performance of David Martin at the weekend, who made his Premier League debut at age 33 for West Ham in a 1-0 victory. And his dad, Alvin, used to play for West Ham United, and they embraced afterwards in the stands in a lovely, touching moment. So that was
to do that against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. As your debut.
As your debut at 33.
Yeah. Good for him.
Yep.
That's great.
And this is from Carlos Andreas. I am a 26-year-old lawyer from Lima, Peru, and I've been listening to the pod for more than 2 years now. I absolutely love what you do. I listen to many football podcasts and see a lot of programs where former football players and coaches analyze and comment on the latest matches, transfers, and I love listening to them, but what you do, guys, it's something else. It is something else.
Yes.
You see, I love my job, I love my family, my friends. All in all, I live a pretty happy life. But as I grow older, I find less and less joy in things because experiences start becoming familiar, and maybe it is that routine kicks in. But no, sports. As I tell the interns and the law firm I work for, sports and football are one of those things that can. And that is what your podcast means to me. Just a couple of lads who enjoy football, playing it and watching it, even if we are not professional. For all the long hours, that feels like a dig. For all the long hours and problems I might have to deal with on a daily basis, as it's just part of life, I get to put my headphones on in the gym or on my walk back home and listen to you get excited as a child would, and as I and millions do over a game, the beautiful game. It's very nice
That's
of you.
Very nice.
Isn't that very nice?
I've always said what we lack in expertise, we make up for in presence. We're here.
We exist. We are thinking.
Yeah.
Sentient beings with microphones. Just wanted to end with a question. Do you guys have any particular TV...
That was very nice, though, honestly.
That's super nice. That. Yeah. Lima, Peru.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any particular TV shows or movies, fiction or not fiction, sport-related, that you like and can recommend to me? Personally, I love Sunderland Till I Die, Looking for Eric, Friday Night Lights. So I would just tell you right now, give the Leeds United one. If you liked Sunderland Till I Die, Take Me Home, Leeds United, Amazon Prime, give that a watch. And maybe even Warnock, the documentary.
Oh, my God. Warnock. Yeah, we've gotten some great material from that on this show.
Warnock, the documentary from 0506, which is just...
There are times when he's just the most reprehensible human being, but you can't take your eyes off of him.
No, you can't. Yeah. Finally, Griff Bitchin says, what are the odds we get an All-Ireland playoff game in the Euros? Do you think any problems could or would arise? We should...
We did talk about that last week, was it? Or 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, there's a good chance.
Yeah.
I don't think right now with the political climate there would be any problems. It would be a grudge match of grudge matches, but I don't...
Well, define problems. Are you talking about like riots? If that's the bar, then yeah, maybe not that. But...
No, in 1993 when we played them in a World Cup qualifier, it was nasty. And people were being killed in Northern Ireland. There was massacres going on. None of that is going on right now. But it... You'll hear nasty sectarian things.
Right.
That hasn't gone away. Actually, the finally question is this one. Ola wants to know where some of our drops come from or what is the story behind them, like, oh, it's crap, or check you later. So, oh, it's crap is Brian Clough.
Oh, it's crap. Oh, it's bloody rubbish. Rubbish.
Shouting at his own players during a training session. Check you later.
That was you doing an impression of Jurgen Klinsmann. You used to call into the show as fake Jurgen Klinsmann, and that was how you would say goodbye. Check you later, fun boy.
Correct.
Which was kind of a callback to The Simpsons, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Which was, Simpsons episode. So we kind of matched.
But that's probably from like 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And the Maradona drop came back last week because...
It was the anniversary, was it not?
It was.
Yeah, here's Diego Maradona a year ago being asked about the quality of Liga MX.
No,
Now, the problem with that one is that I honestly believe some people just listen to the podcast for that.
Well, then they love this podcast today. Is that it?
That's it.
All right. Good stuff. At CO Soccer Pod on Twitter. Caught Offside ESPN on Instagram. Is that right?
Caught Offside ESPN on Instagram. Yeah, that's it. Good. The pros that we are.
Yeah. Let's see. We got a very quick what to watch for in a sec. But first, JJ, I have something to tell you. I have something very important to tell you. Quip. Makers of the Quip electric toothbrush want you to know the one single discovery that matters most for your dental care. It's simply this, that if you have good habits, you are good. That means brushing for 2 minutes twice a day and flossing regularly, no matter what brand you use. Quip makes that simple. Starting with an electric toothbrush, refillable floss, and anti-cavity toothpaste. Quip's electric brush has sensitive sonic vibrations with a built-in timer and 30-second pulses that guides you to a full and even clean. I can't tell you how many times in a pre-Quip world that I was living in, I'd be brushing my teeth and said, God, I wish this toothbrush had sonic vibrations. The Quip floss dispenser comes with pre-marked string to help you use just enough. Plus, Quip delivers a fresh brush head, floss, and toothpaste refills to your door every 3 months with free shipping, so your routine is always right. Join over 3 million healthy mouths and get Quip today, starting at just $25. So here's the deal. If you go to getquip.com/offside right now, you'll get your first refill free. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/offside. That's GETQUIP.com/offside. Quip, The Good Habits Company. That's right, JJ. I don't know what kind of toothbrush you're using, but I guarantee you it's not as good as a Quip. What to watch for? You ready?
I am.
Only a few that I have here for you. I just went midweek. I did not extend into the weekend, all right? Just know that, people. Wednesday, 2:30, Manchester United and Tottenham as Jose Mourinho returns to Old Trafford. I still don't know what Manchester United fans think of him. It seemed like he left, and there was a segment of that fan base that I think really did like him.
But they never really turned on him.
Yeah. He played the crowd very well. While he was there.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be any rancor going back there.
Wednesday, 3:15, Liverpool and Everton at Anfield, as you would expect. It is a big game, of course.
It's huge, and I expect Liverpool to put in a performance, and I'm sure there's Evertonians who are dreading this.
Yeah, this comes at a really bad time for them.
And I'm wondering whether the equalization that a derby has. Like, look at last season. I mean, Liverpool fluked a win. But whether when you're in that... Everton were in good form then. When you're at this low ebb, like, this is basement level. Can Everton actually pull themselves up to put in a performance? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think Marco Silva, if he wants to keep his job, he can lose, but I just think it can't be a 4-0.
No.
They have to have some sort of good account of themselves. But, man, a short week against that club on the road.
There are stats and metrics that say Everton are not as bad as their results.
That's probably true.
So maybe me saying them getting up for this and putting in a performance won't be quite as challenging as... But
you really believe that?
It doesn't really feel that way.
And then Thursday at 3:15, Arsenal and Brighton. Brighton, who have kind of been a sneaky club this year to some of the bigger sides. Arsenal, of course, in just this weird flux that we've been talking about all show long. So I would not write that off so quickly as an Arsenal win, especially because they have struggled at home as well. So, yeah, look out. I don't know. I could see that being another like 1-1 draw potentially. But we never even talked about Arsenal-Norwich this past weekend, how fortunate Arsenal were to even have gotten a draw.
Well, we did. I said that.
Well, did you mention the Aubameyang penalty that was saved, but then... VAR brought it back because Max Aarons had encroached.
Yeah, we didn't mention that.
I mean, that's fortuitiveness, if you've ever seen it. Let's see, JJ, we bring it down the stretch now.
Red card.
You want to go first?
Yeah, I'm just jamming this one in here because I don't really feel strongly about it. I feel bad that I'm doing this, but my red card is to Hertha Berlin for hiring Jurgen Klinsmann.
Why?
Why would you pick... Now, I know he has a relationship on the inside with the ownership of Hertha Berlin, but why Jurgen Klinsmann? What has Jurgen Klinsmann done to suggest that a team in imminent peril... Well, not imminent peril. They've still got time to turn this round. But who are struggling.
He should never be allowed to manage again.
But
he did that bad at the US?
No, but when's it, his last club job was what? Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
What, a decade ago? Over a decade ago. Rafa Honigstein in The Athletic has a really good piece. If you're a subscriber, you should have a read of this. It's dripping with contempt. He doesn't outright say it like I am, but some of the things he says, I had to chuckle at. About Klinsmann, he says, he's flown in from California as a managerial air ambulance tending to a patient that's critical. Hertha were in 16th place with 11 points before the weekend, much closer to Bundesliga 2 than the European places. Even though the great innovator of 2006 was careful to downplay the need for wholesale change at his unveiling on Friday, Hertha must hope that he can reinvent himself if this rescue mission isn't to end in failure. His aim to, quotes, gain confidence via engagement, energy, running, fighting, is unlikely to make a good plan in a league where every single club, Lucien Favre's Dortmund possibly excepted, play the same aggressive style complemented by some well-defined tactical ideas. He then goes on to talk about what we all talk about his time at Bayern Munich, which was he was a bit loose on the old instructions. This is a guy who is living...
Did you say one of the things he wants them to do was running?
Gain confidence via engagement, energy, running and fighting.
Yeah.
That's a direct quote. Like, this is... I don't know. There's been a lot of revisionism in the light of Bruce Arena and in the light of the Triple G problems we have right now with Greg Schells. there's a lot of revisionism about how much better it was under Jurgen or how he had a plan. I'm not sure that he did.
Yeah, I don't know either. Although I still kind of come back to the point of they were average under Bob Bradley. They were average under Jurgen. They were average under Bruce Arena. They've been average under Greg Berhalter. Maybe we're average.
Okay. And a lot of people do subscribe to that.
Players. Players. Players.
Michael O'Neill, Northern Ireland, Finland, Iceland, that all bucks that trend.
Let's see, JJ. My red card here. I'm also kind of shoehorning one in that I just feel like needs to be mentioned. A little personal pet peeve of mine. And this is so menial, but this is my safe space where I get to vent my thoughts and feelings to all of you fine people out there. And this bothers me. The European Championship draw. Why is this a thing that needs to happen before we even know all the teams that are involved?
Ugh.
Like, why? I know it doesn't matter, but I just don't get why we can't wait for the field to actually be finalized before revealing groups. JJ, imagine this exchange happened between you and I. JJ, I made you dinner. Oh, that was nice of you. What did you make me? Chicken. Or steak, or fish, or a salad. Oh, well, that's not super helpful. Andrew, which one is it? Well, JJ, I actually don't know. I haven't decided yet. Okay, Andrew, well, wouldn't you have just waited to tell me that you made me dinner when you actually knew what you'd be making? Good point, JJ. I'll get back to you when I've decided. Like, why?
I mean, I guess they announced the cities as well, so
right, that's
like
fine.
Ireland will play two games in Dublin if they qualify and could end up in Bilbao. I guess there's some kind of, this whole thing is a mess, let's be honest. The qualifying's a mess.
Boy, you used to love this tournament. There's nothing left in this sport.
It's
the reformatting of this tournament, VAR in the Premier League. You really you come in here sullen and sad every week.
No, come on.
The sport is just a shell of what it once was for you as a boy.
Shut up. That's not true.
You don't enjoy it anymore.
That's not true. It's
the
just,
joy is gone.
There's no, what there is, there's a bunch of people, blazers, who go around, marketing people who aren't football people or supporters, who go around deciding that things need to be changed, that we're just fine. And it's greed, 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 more, more, more. We'll have a European Championship. Like, think about it. 20 years ago, we had a European Championship where we had it in Holland and Belgium, two countries, and that was seen as excessive, but it's two small countries, 16 teams. Now look what we're doing. We're having it everywhere.
Right.
Come on. Like 24 teams. And we still don't even know who's qualified 2 months out from the tournament. We won't know.
I guess it does bear mentioning some of the notes to take away from the groups. I mean, obviously, everybody's talking about Group F, which features Germany, France.
What is that about,
and
by the way?
Portugal.
Why would you have all those teams in together?
Well, it's the draw. I mean, no, what do you think? This is rigged? Why would they rig that?
And all three teams technically will get out.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true. Although I would say right now, if one of them doesn't, I've got this weird feeling about Germany entering some kind of like what Italy was in recently. And now Italy is very much out of, it feels.
A long-term funk.
Maybe not long term, but like maybe this cycle. Maybe they just, you know, they didn't get out of their group at the World Cup,
yeah,
which was a far easier group than that. And we don't even know who the fourth team in that group might wind up being. Iceland, which, you know, that's brutal right there. England are with Croatia
again.
Yep,
and so the we'll Czech Republic. And, the only two teams that have beaten them in competitive football in a long time are in their group, and potentially
Scotland, which would be really fun.
Or Erik Braut Haaland's Norway.
Norway, yeah. So
or the Serbs. The Serbs are good too.
Yeah, that Serbia-Croatia matchup, which could potentially happen, would be
forgot about that.
Could be an interesting one as well. But we'll get more into that certainly as, you know, once we know the groups.
Thursday the 26th of March.
There you go. Boy, that's not for a while.
Long time.
Long time for you to wait.
Caught Offside's Man of the Match.
What do you got?
Cristiano Ronaldo scored his first Juventus goal since October. He rescued a point in a 2-2 Serie A draw against Sassuolo and Turin on Sunday as the Italian champions dropped points for only the third time this season. Ronaldo netted from the penalty spot midway through the second half to end his four-match goal drought in all competitions and deny Sassuolo their first ever win in this fixture. But it's not about him. What a debut this was from 18-year-old Sassuolo goalkeeper Stefano Toratti. Toratti was given his debut after both keepers ahead of him in the pecking order had sustained injuries. I honestly don't have the words. So many emotions. It all happened so quickly and I never expected this. It was an extraordinary sensation and an incredible day for me, he told DAZN. Incredibly, Gianluigi Buffon had already made over 100 Serie A appearances by the time Turati was born in September 2001, according to Football Italia. It was an honour to play against Gigi Buffon, Turati said, as I used to watch him when I was growing up. I am so happy and shocked that I don't even know what to say. The first thing I have to do now is call my mum. It was quite a debut for Turati, the highlight of which was a save on a Ronaldo free kick. One final note on that game. Jeremy Boga's finish on the first Sassuolo goal is sensual, Andrew. Very sensual.
Nice. Very nice. Speaking of sensual, JJ, my man of the match. It's been too long since I feel like I've made Lionel Messi my man of the match. Now, by the time you're listening to this, it bears mentioning that he may have won the Ballon d'Or. But I actually gave him my man of the match before I even knew whether or not that happened, simply because of what happened over the weekend. JJ, we've got a legit title race going on right now in La Liga, and he is starting to rise to the occasion because he did this yesterday at the Wanda Metropolitana against Atletico Madrid in the 86th minute in what had been a scoreless draw.
Messi, si viene Messi, ya lo ve Antoine, le pone una pelota, pinta pared, Antoine, disparo de Messi, gol!
Yelled that for several more seconds. It was Barcelona's first win in three tries at Atletico's new ground. This is what he does, JJ. Barcelona were not outstanding in this game. Atletico Madrid probably should have won. They hit the woodwork. Barcelona did as well, but it seemed like Atletico Madrid were probably on the front foot more of this match. But sometimes in matches like this, it just comes down to one guy being the difference. And when you have Messi, the advantage is tipped in your favor. It was his 30th goal against Atletico Madrid. There's only one team that he scored more against. Do you know who?
One team he scored more
than his 30 goals against Atletico. He's got 37 against
Bilbao.
Sevilla. So Barca moved back above Real Madrid on goal difference. Meanwhile, Sevilla are third, just 1 point back, but they have played one more game. Atletico are sixth right now, but only 6 points off the lead. Worth mentioning, too, Real Sociedad, Bilbao are fourth and fifth, tied on 26 points. So there is a jump. Like, there are six teams right now that are close to being a part of some sort of title race. There's six teams that are all closer than what first to second is in the Premier League. So there is something happening in La Liga right now that is a lot of fun. Parity at the top of the league, a thing that we are never accustomed to saying about this league. Now, look, it's still relatively early, so by the time, like, we could be sitting here in 3 months and maybe Barcelona and Real Madrid have separated themselves from the group. But all I can go off of what I've seen so far is this, and this is right now a fun title race. So, yeah. Props to Messi. Like I said, I think that he has won his sixth Ballon d'Or, but there's a chance he hasn't. So I'll just leave that open-ended because I don't know yet.
Well, the Puskás Award might be heading to the United States after the weekend. Terence Boyd did this. I know you can't see it. Well, basically, it's a volley, and we love a volley.
From far away.
From downtown. Controls it with the inside of his foot, and it pops up, and he hits it in stride. And it was for, I'll have to look up his team. I don't even know who he plays for anymore. Against Duisburg.
Boyd! It passes Nick! Was für ein Tor! Terence Boyd! Und da ist er mit seinem Jubel!
So that's Hallescher's Terence Boyd. It's just a brilliant goal.
It's incredible, yeah.
In the third division of German football. Which is quite a fall for him.
Yeah.
I mean, 2 years ago in the Bundesliga, then he ended up at Toronto. That didn't work out. And now, I mean,
well, he's still capable of doing that. Amazing goal. Look it up. Did you tweet it out from our...
I did. I shall put it out again. Awesome.
Nice. Well, hey, this was fun. Our thanks to Andrew Mangan from Arsblog talking about Unai Emery with us. I want to tell you, JJ, I did watch The Irishman. I'm a little bit annoyed with all these people who are whining over how long it is. Okay, 3.5 hours is a long time. It's excellent.
It's like going to an Italian restaurant and, that's a bit too much pasta. What are you expecting? It's a Scorsese film.
And by the way, like, it's on Netflix after 2 weeks of being in the theater. Like, stop complaining. That's a gift.
I saw it twice in the theater.
Did you really?
And a third time at home on Netflix.
Oh, so you like it to, like, next level.
But I read the book as well, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, after After seeing it, or you read this book a long time
beforehand.
So you've known for years what happened to Jimmy Hoffa, while the rest of us were all in the dark.
Well,
how dare you keep such a secret from us?
There are people disputing Frank Sheeran's version of events. But the best, not the best bit of the book, the most chilling part of the book, he did not put in the film. I don't want to ruin the book or the film, so I can't say anything.
Right. Tell me, we're going to end this right now, because I want to know.
All I would say is Warren Report.
Oh.
Warren Commission.
Oh, that means Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Oh, we got to go because I need to hear more. Hey, this was fun, man. To you, I say.
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.